Up next on Technometria, Scott and I talk with Vahe Kasargian about Sense, a platform for experimenting with the interconnectivity of worldwide devices, from IT Conversations. Vahe, good to have you with us.
Yes, hello. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. And Scott, welcome to you.
Yeah, thanks. Glad to be here.
So, Vahe, you said that you've been listening to Technometria. I know we've met a long time ago. It's almost 5 years ago now when we actually met in person for the first time. But you're probably aware we've been kind of doing a deep dive in sensors and sensor networks and Internet of Things and just talking to all kinds of people. And it was surprising to find out that you're associated with Sense, SEN.SE. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and how you got involved?
That's right. I must tell you that I'm a big fan of your podcast for many, many years. And when I introduce it, I call it the grandfather of podcasts, in fact, to my friends. And to better understand Sense, in fact, maybe we should backtrack also to its own grandfather, which is a plastic rabbit called the Nabastag. About 10 years ago, we were developing this, in fact. So it would connect to a wireless network, whether to work at the office. And in fact, it was indeed the ancestor of the Internet of Things, in the sense that it was the first time we would see a device to manage information technology without a keyboard or a monitor, I would say. So it was
You said a plastic rabbit.
It is a plastic rabbit called the Nabastag, which means rabbit in Armenian. And the idea was, I mean, it was like a radio eventually that would just trigger whenever the RSS feed contained something new for you. It would play songs eventually. Your friends could be sending you messages or song. It could read emails to you. Or you could even have a better, tighter, more intimate or more implicit communication also with more significant others, I would say. So this was way before even Google came up with Google Circles. I would say that we had an interaction design that was very similar to how people interact through objects and through information technology without the use of a keyboard or a monitor. So this was the beginning about 10 years ago. And it was we learned a lot from it. I mean, it was hugely popular in Europe. It sold as well in North America. Through ThinkGeek and so on, but in Europe it was more of a mainstream product. Now, what we learned from it is at every possible level, I would say, that is at the hardware level, at the software level, at the platform level, and mostly at the interaction designs and as well. So Sense today, I'll tell you what it is today, maybe later we can discuss where it is going in the future, but today Sense is an experimental playground that, in summary, does three things: feel, act, and make sense. So feeling means that it has inputs that come from different devices, physical devices, Arduinos, existing devices such as Fitbits, Wii Things, and so on, or virtual devices eventually. It could be a tweet feed, it could be anything, even it could be a patch bay feed, for example. So that's the feeling end. Now, it can act on it, that is, it can do some processing using some pre-made applications we provide or some application that you can develop and produce a feed out so that your device, whether it's an Arduino or any other device, in fact, can react, in fact, and express itself. Or those devices also could be eventually virtual. And the make sense part is the most important part for us, because so far what we described is just a set of piping, I would say, that get the bits flow through a network. What's very important is this: how do you deal with an overflow or overload of data? How do you make sense of this? How do you aggregate? How do you mash up? How do you correlate? And this is the third part of Sense that is extremely important.
Yeah. So Scott, you've played around with Sense some, haven't you?
I've actually just started into that with my project. You know, I've got a sensor project that we're working on. We're about to announce, and part of it wanted to support a variety of different platforms, and that's really where I came across Sense as we started to search around for platforms to integrate with. And you know, it was kind of interesting to see the approach that's a little bit broader than other people, where there seems to be a fairly flexible API for submitting data and events into Sense, And then I was really impressed by sort of the open aspect of the sense board, the dashboard. And I guess, you know, I'd be really interested to hear, you know, more about what you're looking at. It looks almost as though you're even opening up the sense board and the instrumentation or the display and analytics sort of to a developer community or people to be able to add to and enhance the sense board itself.
Well, that's absolutely right. And this is why I chose the word playground to describe Sense today, because it is meant for open innovation. And we could have built this platform just for us to play and experiment with it. But we opened it up in the spirit, one, of openness and collaboration and the general principle of the open lab for innovation, but also in the interest of agility, I would say, so that we can get feedback and constantly improve. So part of our expertise here, because if you line up the kind of expertise we have at Sense, it's very broad, in fact. Maybe the core team is about 6 or 8 people, but you line up the experience we have, maybe it sums up to over 200 years. Then again, design ranging from product design or interaction design all the way to engineering, telecommunications, and hardware, and so on. So we could have kept all of this to ourselves, but in the spirit of collaborating in the most agile and transparent way, we said, you know, why not open it up and see whomever comes up with interesting ideas or claims, per se. What we wanted to do really is to get this thing off the ground, and while it was flying, just replace the parts. And this is exactly what we're doing based on feedback we get from other peers.
So part of the problem that Sense is trying to solve, at least as I understand it, is you have a sensor, you know, say a power sensor or a temperature sensor or whatever, and it's sending data. And, you know, you can take something like Patch Bay or whatever, and you can log that data and see what it's doing. But the goal then has to be do something with it, right? We have to get to a point where we say, okay, you know, the temperature is 68 degrees. That might be good or bad. Let's figure that out and do something. Turn on the heat, turn on the cool. I mean, whatever we want to do. So what's your philosophy around that? How does Sense work to make that possible?
Well, you can do the same things, I would say. And then again, in the spirit of collaborations I mentioned, we are big on open standards on existing products. We're open to Patch Bay and other devices, as I mentioned. And you can more or less do the same thing. That is, when you go on Sense and claim your because you have to register, obviously, so that you can get a password and log in. And then you define a device, in fact, which you connect to your sensor, right? So your sensor, let's say it's an Arduino, we deliver it to you, in fact. You can click and get the code that you embed into your Arduino. Once you've got that, and most typically what you'll do, your Arduino would communicate probably through HTTP with our platform, right? Now, I just mentioned HTTP, then again, in the spirit of making it as modular and open as possible, if your sensor, for example, can communicate through XMPP, we handle this too. We currently are working on the CoAP interface eventually, so we'll soon have this one. We may or may not release it to the outside, depending on how ugly or how clean it is, but we are playing with this as well, right? So at the hardware end, you have a number of options, HTTP, regular, long polling. It all depends on the power of your hardware and also the time you're willing to put into the experimentation. So once you've done this, your hardware generates a feed, right? We call it the feed, just a stream of data, which you capture in your applications on the server side. So in your whenever you log to Sense, you can install a certain number of applications to do things like finding the min, finding the max, finding a threshold eventually, and even mashing up data or calculating on the data that your sensor is generating. And from then, what you can do is produce yet another feed that you can output to a device. Again, that device could be physical or virtual. So eventually what you can do is feed your data to your Twitter account, let's say. We do have an application that does this for you, or send an email. You can do this, or then again, what you can do is visualize and look at trends eventually in what's happening in your data feed.
So just to understand a little bit, going a little bit deeper in this, you know, I noticed as I went through the site, and I was very familiar with PatchBay and have used a couple of other protocols, I wanted to understand your data model a little bit more. So you guys have the concept of a channel, you have devices, and then you have feeds. Are there more aspects, and can you explain a little bit about how those relate?
Yes, absolutely. So typically, you can get away with just having a device that generates a feed. Now, we introduce the concept of channel because when you take a Fitbit or a WeThing or another device, let's say, that has its all its own protocol, so that doesn't necessarily speak HTTP, and you don't have control over this. So this is what the channel does for you. So at one end, it speaks with your hardware device. On the other end, it translates to what the platform can accept.
Yeah, so the channel is kind of a translator or a widget that's sitting in between the other website and Sense.
It is exactly this, yeah. And it could be, then again, the channel could interface with your hardware device or some software input as well.
And right now, developers such as myself, when we want to submit, we add a channel that is actually a device. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And then so once... Go ahead. Yeah.
No, what I wanted to add is if you have patch bay feeds, eventually those translate into channels into the Sense platform.
Okay. And now once I have my device, let's say my device has got, you know, 50 sensors on it, I would actually then have my device begin to submit those values as each one as a separate feed?
Yes, individually.
Okay.
And the idea, I'm sorry, the idea is that ultimately you can build, and then again, we're going back to the principle of open experimentation. So we assume that people will be building Arduinos, and this is precisely what they're doing. And those various channels, in fact, some channels could be for explicit messaging, temperature, lighting sensors, and so on. Some others are meant for metadata eventually. Example, if your Arduino is running on battery, what's the level of the battery, what's happening to it, and this kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting because with my sensors, that's exactly what I'm doing is on a single sensor, we're actually submitting the value, the battery, and then both directions of the received signal strength.
Yeah.
So they're wireless, and so we want to be able to aggregate and put all those together. But in that case, on a sensor, that would be four separate feeds on that sensor?
Yes, exactly.
And I do have to joke with you and say, now I know you have Arduino in here. We're basing ours on the NetDuino, so you're going to have to add device support for NetDuinos in here, too.
I'm making notes right now.
I noticed that I'm going to have to keep selecting other on what my device is. Now, one thing I'm curious, too, one aspect that I saw in PatchBay that was really useful and that worked really well is the ability to sort of dynamically create a feed on the fly. As a developer, somebody comes in, they've got to define their device, give it a description. Once they've done that, do they have to explicitly define and create every feed in advance, or can they have their device just start, you know, posting and publishing to feeds dynamically and just sort of generate them on the fly?
You know what, Scott? That's an excellent question, because in the initial design we did have all of this, but what we found out at some point it came with a high cost and complexity to the users. In fact, it was extremely flexible, so we reduced a little bit this complexity, and this is the current situation. But then again, through gathering feedback, we are trying to improve this interface and make it as easy as possible, lower the barriers as much as possible so that people can come and innovate.
Hmm. Excellent.
So you mentioned that there are a set of pre-built, I don't know if you call them applications or
channels.
What you're calling the pre-built applications that people can run against their data, but they can also program their own. What's the programming model?
You can, we have an API, which is a REST API. So you can just pick the language you want. As long as you can speak REST, we do the rest.
Okay.
Now, for the dashboard instruments, what are people writing those in?
Most of them, in fact, so there are a number of languages behind the scenes. We do have some Java, some Erlang, but most of what you see in terms of rapid prototyping, user interfaces, and so on is developed in Python.
Interesting. Now, I know, and Phil, I don't know if this is the direction you were going, but if I'm building a dashboard, like when I go in to look at the applications and the app library, a lot of these are visual components that have to comply to some sort of model to be able to integrate into your dashboard. How is that done?
Well, we published most of our APIs, but probably we have a few that are not documented yet. It's not. Then again, it is not because we didn't want to reveal this. Maybe we got lazy or distracted at some point. So it's just about asking how you do, you want to implement a certain functionality. And we get in this discussion. We do have a Google Groups, in fact, a Google group on which there are discussions. But it's, our experience with the population that is running these experiments is that some people come, they're really interested, ask a few questions, and as soon as they completely engage in the project, we establish a direct email communication with them. And this is why the Google Groups is becoming a bit more, less populated. Mm. It's unfortunate. In fact, we should have these discussions in a more public way, I would say. That's right. But otherwise, we have good interactions and good feedback coming up and progressively documenting and improving this platform.
Is there there's a invitation because it's beta right now. Is there anything that I need to do as a developer other than just get an invitation from you to start developing and using the API and other things?
Not at all. We opened it up completely. At some point, it was private beta. Now it's pretty public beta. So you ask for your registration key. You get it right away. And from then on, there's an excellent tutorial as well. I don't know if Scott can give a testimonial of this, but there is a very good tutorial. And by the way, there's another one specific account, in fact, which is sense/demo. So that's sen.se/demo. That gives you a very good pedagogical overview, I would say, of what you can do and how you can use this platform.
Oh, very good. Well, I'll make sure that there's a link to that on the show notes page for people.
Yeah, the demo and the information there is actually pretty impressive. I was pushing this weekend. I was hoping to have it integrated and have a dashboard up and going, but I got caught up in a couple of other things. So this week is my week to have Sense working with our project.
And what we realized through this platform also is that there are so many challenges to resolve. Then again, we're talking about the more the part of the platform that's closer to the hardware, I would say, to the pipes, to throughput, to scalability, to reliability, and so on. But there are so many challenges that we had not accounted for, and that more relates to how can you be agile and quick in putting together a project and bringing it to closure, bringing it to a certain result that you can evaluate without getting entangled all the way and all the time into bits and bytes and feeds and so on. So this is what we are really learning at this point.
And it seems like you had some goals as you put this together because, and what I mean by that, I mean, obviously everybody has goals as they put a site together. What I mean is it almost feels like you wanted to play with this yourself. There were some things that you wanted to do and get done. And what are those? What are you trying to accomplish here with this whole internet sensor business? What do you see as the end game or where you want this to go?
That's a very good question too. Ultimately, where this is going, and maybe we addressed so many challenges that we forgot about the financial aspect of things. What's the business model behind, right? So. At this point, then again, it's open innovation, but this is definitely going somewhere more specific where to backtrack a little bit to what I was saying in the beginning, the real challenges we find are closer to the mental as opposed to being closer to the metal, I would say. So indeed, you need a platform and an infrastructure. You need them to be reliable and fast and scalable, definitely. And this is what we have at this point. But making sense of all of this, I mean, just having all this data out is not good enough. How can you aggregate and mash up and make sense and make it in a way that the interfaces are really transparent to the humans who use them? This is the current situation with the Internet of Things, if you will, today. Every device is intrusive, I would say. It's very, it's extremely present. It's, I mean, you can't do without. It can't go without being noticed. That's the current problem we find. So what is it that we will build on top of this platform that makes it, that we integrate it as best as possible in people's environment? This is where we're going next. And definitely it does involve some custom hardware, some pre-existing hardware, and it does also involve some pre-existing platforms. Because if you look around, the pieces of the technology that best integrate with humans today are the tablets and the smartphones. So we have to take advantage of all of these, in fact. So cheap sensors in the environment, pre-existing objects such as Fitbits and WeThings and so on, and as well as the people's Androids and smartphones and so on.
So Scott, is a beyond wanting support for Netduino and the playing around you've done, what are you trying to accomplish with Sense, and what have you found?
You know, the thing that I like, you know, is, you know, to me, as I've kind of watched this space and some of these platforms that have shown up, you know, the Sense has really evolved to sort of, to me, the next level. You know, there are a variety of sites, if I even look at Patchbay, that are doing data aggregation and very simple primitive graphing of data, and that's it. The thing that I'm after here and what I really like is the ability to create these Sense boards for somebody to very easily not only submit the data into the system, but, you know, begin to visualize and analyze that data, and then, you know, even start to create the outbound feeds or the outbound control signals. Mm-hmm. And that's where, to me, as I watch the Internet of Things, you know, there are these different layers throughout the Internet of Things as a very generic, almost overused term. And this is beginning to address one of these middle layers that to me is going to become really, you know, just one of the most exciting parts of what's going on. It's not just about all the devices being connected to the internet, but it's when you actually are able to start to do things with the data that they're generating. And that's where I really looked at Sense. And, you know, immediately it's funny, I've got data going into Patchbay. And I can think of things I want to do that they don't allow me to do with their platform alone, where, you know, Sense with the controls and the dashboards really starts to provide that kind of facility.
Well, this is absolutely great feedback, Scott. Thank you so much, because it is precisely in line what we're trying to accomplish. And with respect to that, we have so many widgets and applications and gizmos, I would say, that we didn't release yet, because it is not up to our level of satisfaction in terms of how much you can accomplish versus the cognitive load it imposes on you. This is a very important concept for us.
Great. Well, it definitely takes an approach that's really a step above and beyond. And that's the thing that I'm really impressed with and love to see as it's continuing to progress. What I'm kind of curious, do you publish any stats currently about, you know, how many devices, how many feeds you've got, how much information is actually flowing through the Sense platform at this time?
We don't publish these data, I would say. And there are, but you have outliers, definitely. I mean, it's way beyond the Pareto rule, I would say. It is not 80-20. That is, it is not 80% of the traffic that is used up by 20% of the user. It's more like 98% of the traffic is taken up by 2% of users. Yeah. So there's a large skew there, and therefore averages and statistical data don't make much sense. But one thing worth pointing out maybe is that about a year ago, we came up with a partnership with Orange, which is a pretty well-known telco in Europe. And we have a joint lab, in fact, in Grenoble, in eastern France. The name of the lab is Thinging, in fact, where we have a number of students, designers, engineers, and so on, who not only built the hardware but also the casings, I would say, the form factors around them, and invent objects. So just to give you an idea on the numbers, they looked at about 100 different projects. And after 6 months, they came up with 7 projects that they delivered. So it gives you an idea of how many ideas you can play with, so that ultimately you can, you know, you can get just a few successes.
Now, a couple other things I can think of that you might comment on. One, talk a little bit about rate limiting, or what you guys are doing in the area of people submitting events at what kind of rates, and what are you going to allow? What are you allowing now? Things like
Excellent.
That.
Excellent. You're right. Absolutely. And that's a constant debate here. And in fact, currently it is not limited in any way. We have just a few servers running this. The system is highly scalable. In terms of protocols, I would say it's largely based on XMPP behind the scenes, and therefore it's extremely efficient. It's all based on notification systems. And we even have, in the spirit again of flying the plane and replacing the parts as well, there's a whole core mechanism of XMPPs that has been rewritten with AMQP.
AMQP, to unpack that a bit.
That's, let me tell you what it stands for, but AMQP typically is the protocol behind RabbitMQ.
Okay.
It's Advanced Message Queuing Protocol.
Oh, that's right, I've heard of it. Yep, RabbitMQ, got it.
That's right. And highly efficient, highly scalable, but it is not released yet. So in the sense that even with the current system we have, which is not completely to our liking, we can handle completely the traffic that's coming in. It's pretty comfortable, and we don't plan on limiting it yet, although we have planned for quotas. And most specifically, whenever, you know, currently it's just, we said, for open innovation, is not meant for business. But anyone who want to drive this into a business case and make it a commercial product, then we'll have a discussion about how to make it more efficient, more robust. You know, any lab, in fact, at some point has its detriments, and you sacrifice throughput or performance just for the sake of flexibility. So today we are in this situation. A lot of code is written in Python and so on, but the more efficient parts are behind, are being prototyped and can be also integrated.
So it's interesting, just as a side note, another one. I'm not sure if you're familiar with IBM's MQTT, just
Definitely
as another
so.
Another possible protocol to support. We're supporting that one also. And, you know, it's interesting. It's just fascinating to watch all of these protocols and layers that have been designed and built that are able to support these kind of technologies.
MQTT is definitely a very interesting protocol. It's something that we're looking into and most likely will integrate as well.
That's good. So now, what about event or feed storage? At this point, are you doing any limits on the history of submitted events and how far back you're going to provide storage?
No limit whatsoever, and you know that data storage is cheap. But then again, as soon as you hit business applications, I believe this will become a hindrance. Again, in the spirit of flying a plane, replacing the parts, we initially started with a MySQL database behind. We have another technology behind, in fact, for doing charting and more, you know, horizontal distribution of the data on multiple servers, which is not active at this point, but it is proven working, and we could put it up if needed.
To do that, are you open? Is it one of the standard sort of NoSQL platforms or distributed
Yes.
storage platforms?
Yes, yes. And by the way, what we use behind the scenes at this point is an abstraction. Let's go back to the same agile principle. When you start early on, what you want to do is connect all the layers as much as possible. And the layers, again, go from the metal all the way to the mental, as we said. So you build the hardware, all the connections, the feeds, the user interfaces, and you want to get to the application and see how really people integrate this into their lifestyle. And you do this, you repeat this as fast as possible and as often as possible. And then you replace the parts. In this spirit, initially MySQL was incredible. It was very good, and we included some hard coding to begin with. But as we moved on, we knew that we needed more scaling up and so on. So we introduced an abstraction layer. In this case, we used Thrift for example, which is the open source developed initially by Facebook, which abstracts completely persistence compared to the rest of the platform. So yes, NoSQL is an option, but we could be going to other technologies as well, if needed, because we have this abstraction.
Hmm. Yeah, nice. It's interesting. I was looking at your API, and at the basic level, right? I mean, what people do is they publish data into your platform and you store it away. And then when somebody asks for it, you bring it back up. And of course, the asking could be an app or the dashboard or whatever. But it is a, maybe I'm missing it, but it seems like it is the kind of data that does not require large amounts of joins across tables, right? The stuff that SQL's good at, it really does look like it's made for a NoSQL kind of database.
You're absolutely right on. Joins, not important, relational, not important in this case. And what's very particular in this case is in most applications, and this is more empirical research, I would say, than just theoretical analysis. Through empirical research, we realized that most applications require to have a lot of granularity in recent data and less so in past data. Mm-hmm. So though you want to keep many months or maybe years of data, at some point you need techniques so that you can aggregate and store the older data in a way that is accessible, but maybe not as efficiently as whatever you just consumed recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you, I don't know if this is what your abstraction does, but it seems like you almost want an abstraction that gives you really fine-grained recent and then kind of tails off and gets more coarse-grained as you go back and maybe allows you to drill into it. But like you say, it's less efficient. You're going to have to wait as you drill into the detailed data.
That's absolutely right. And then again, if you look at it from a purely engineering perspective, you may find this ludicrous. But when you look at the bulk of the applications, well, this is the pattern you identify.
Yeah. So with all of this right now sort of being unlimited, so what's the business model? What's the business plan here with Sense?
Well, currently what you see at Sense, even it's visible at the top left corner of this web page, it says OpenSense, in fact. What you have is the open platform. So in the future, the part that's closer to the mental and to people's lifestyle is coming up, and this is the real business case behind it. That is, we reveal this platform for everyone to innovate behind, but we're already working on the next iteration of what could be, I wouldn't say the new Nabastag, who's 10 years old now. I mean, there's nothing to compare. We're trying to reinvent this a little bit in the sense of how can we integrate technology in people's everyday life, make it useful and relevant at every moment. This is the core business we're after.
So at that point, there will be a sort of for-pay service. That what types of differentiation do you think you'll be providing from what's currently here on OpenSense?
Well, OpenSense will remain. I think it will remain as an open lab constantly. We will most probably come up with applications that are on top of OpenSense. That would be the business part, I would say. But OpenSense, to me, then again, it's not a commitment, I hope. It will remain completely open and free forever.
And with OpenSense, does that mean if I'm submitting data into OpenSense right now, that that's open, public to everybody, no way to sort of hide it or keep it confidential? Whatever I'm putting in is open to the world?
Do we have 2 hours to discuss it? I don't know. I mean, that's a big topic. That's a very big topic. And
so how is it right now? The way it is right now, can I go browse everybody's feeds and see everybody's data? Okay.
No, not at all. No, the easy answer is this. Everything is private. Now, you can share the part of the information you want.
On your public page.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you pick whenever you want to share. Everything is by default completely private. Now, I think that this discussion about privacy has been a major hindrance in the Internet of Things. And what used to be called 10 years ago, pervasive computing or ambient mm-hmm. intelligence, whatever.
Yeah.
And most particularly, by the way, pervasive computing was such a poor term to designate the segment, I would say, because pervasive sounded so much like intrusive that people get scared off completely. Now, what's happening at this point, we take privacy very, very seriously, to the extent, in fact, that we feel that deceiving or lying could be a fundamental right. So if you go in the application on Sense, for example, one of the applications is called The Liar. That is, you can just generate your feeds and so on, but ultimately, you can have The Liar every now and again introduce some noise just in case someone is watching you too closely. And you don't feel like revealing everything completely all the time. So that's for the public feeds, obviously, right? Or the public displays. Whatever is private remains private all the time. But just to tell you how seriously we take this issue of privacy and of intimacy, we introduced this, maybe it's a joke, maybe it's a useful application, I don't know. It's called The Liar, precisely to distort the data that's coming in.
That's pretty good. That's the I'm gonna provide my GPS location. It just won't be accurate.
There you go.
Oh, that's good.
Along those lines, by the way, you may have noticed Google Latitude, and you can set it on an automatic mode. That is, it completely tracks you all the time. That's your GPS location, or you can set your position manually. You go and pretend you're at a certain position. So at the other end, whomever is looking at you, watching you, and so on, can never know whether you're in automatic mode or just set the data manually. So it's an interesting concept.
You know, I really liked, I think it was, who was it? Yahoo, I think, had Firebird as a project for a while. And the thing that I like there is they actually let you set a resolution level so that you could have it be at a state level, city level, you know, and determine the accuracy down to a certain level of a region. So as you moved around, it would hop you from city to city rather than giving your exact details on the street. But you could also allow someone access to the high resolution feed. And it's fascinating because, again, in this Internet of Things and in the sharing of data, I think things like that are going to continue to be real powerful filters to be able to run the data through.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's very interesting.
It's a variation on The Liar. It's the fuzzy theme, right?
Exactly. It's going to let people know generally where you are, but not specifically where you are. And they had done a spectacular job when we were working with it on getting it to be like city-based. I played with it one day on city-based, and it was neat even driving in my car to have it show the track as I jumped from city to city as I was moving around, not, you know, giving any more detail than that.
And beyond this, you know, this is an important part also, but sometimes you forget about another very important point in technology is the fun we should have at the end as well. Mm-hmm. That is, sometimes we think too much about how rational the use of technology should be, but sometimes it is just to make our environment better, funner, nicer, more enchanted, and we are really after this.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. We shouldn't lose track of the joy that we're after and just trying to make all of these things work. So, hey, one of the things that I think would be interesting to have you comment about is just what kind of sensors do you have and why do you have them and what are you trying to do with them?
We are true believers of open standards. Again, we mentioned a couple of pieces of technology we put together. It's a waste to reinvent things, I would say. So in this case, all the interfaces we currently experiment with, in fact, are based on Arduinos. And my understanding is that worldwide, or Arduinos and Netduinos and similar products, I would say, I'm speaking for the industry here that we need a couple of years, I would say, of experimentation using these technologies that are very flexible, probably not too compact, not too robust, I would say, but extremely flexible for open innovation. So everything we do at this point is based somehow on some Arduino platform.
And what are you measuring in your own life?
Oh, we have nice examples. Measuring the number of coffees people take, and you know how, and then segregating this between short espressos, medium espressos, and long Americanos, for example. The number of times the fridge door was open, on average how long it was open. And, you know, you'll find this on Sense/demo as well. Or I can even put up a link on blog.sense eventually about a video clip we have where it shows our fridge door, for example. When it stays open too long, you get a warning after 10 seconds, another warning after 20 seconds, eventually after 45 seconds, the office manager will get a text message.
Nice.
And comes running down the hall, obviously, and we tell them, yes, we have a guest, we're showing the demo.
Now, in explaining a little bit about how that timer monitoring works, that's an application that you've built within Sense. Is that correct?
Well, it uses a combination of the ready-made applications you already have, because you can combine those applications together. Because eventually you have an application that takes two feeds, for example, and does some math on them and outputs a feed. That's the result, right? So it's a number of building blocks like this that we aligned that produce this behavior. So ultimately, in the end, we have the application that takes a feed in and sends a text message. So it's like Lego blocks that you organize one after another.
Mm-hmm. And is the Sense platform actually providing, for example, the 45-second threshold where it's providing some sort of a polling mechanism to watch a feed and know that that's still in a particular state for 45 seconds, and so then it's going to trigger the next event? Or where does the timing occur?
It's very interesting. In fact, I wonder how we would have prototyped this today, or the various prototypes we could have built. In this specific instance, because this is one of our first prototypes, the timer is in the Arduino, in fact.
Okay.
But it is not necessarily the best way of doing things. In the future, this is not what we'd be advocating for. On the contrary, all those parameters and changes should be the closest possible to the end user and the application.
Excellent.
So one question I have, and maybe I just haven't gone through the documentation closely enough, but it seems that it would be interesting. This is kind of my own high horse or hobby horse, I guess. It would be interesting to have Sense tell me when something changes. In other words, I've got a feed from a device, and it's spitting out 25, 25, 25, 25, 25, and all of a sudden it goes to 35. That's when I care. It would be interesting if the Sense platform actually would, you know, call a webhook, a URL that I provide when that happens, so that I can just be responding to the changes and let Sense do the kind of watching for me.
Very interesting question, Phil. I believe we do have an application that does like this. I'm not sure whether we have it online or not. I hope we do.
Yeah.
But exactly. Not only do we want to check for variations or for thresholds that are crossed, for example,
exactly.
Upwards or downwards. Exactly. Or we even have an application, in fact, that checks for silence. That is, if the system didn't get any information for a certain period of the time, then you react. So that's a tricky application as well.
Yeah, it's hard to know when something didn't happen.
Exactly.
But it's not so hard if you're willing to say it didn't happen between this and this, right? So if you say, if you give it a threshold, if something didn't happen in 5 minutes, then there's obviously something wrong, because this thing does produce data, once a minute, for example.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, no, that would be very good. I would be very interested in those kinds of features, because I think that makes my job as a programmer a lot easier when I can let, a platform like Sense, do the data logging and do, essentially managing the data, but then just tell me when there's something I care about.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do have this application. I'm absolutely sure. Now, is it installed on the platform today, accessible? I'm not sure. But, you send me an email, it will be up the next day.
Good.
That's good. Yeah.
So Scott asked a little bit about future business models. Are you anticipating that what you're doing now with OpenSense is going to continue for a while?
Yes, OpenSense will remain, to the best of our knowledge today, it will remain as is. Then again, our next iteration is to find out how we can, we said earlier, how we can bring joy, happiness, and enchantment to people, I would say.
Yeah.
based on these tools and those Lego blocks, I would say, which will remain, definitely, we see it this way, and improve even. We had many improvements even recently on the platform. We keep improving all the time, adding more, you know, applications, in fact, that enhance meaning. This is typically where we're working now, right? I mean, making feeds faster, storage faster, we do it all the time, but we don't brag about it.
Yeah.
But as we add more elements to calculate, to mash up, to aggregate, those are the real additions that we're adding to the platform now.
Well, very good. We look forward to keeping up with the changes as you get them done. It's been great to talk to you today, Vahe.
Thank you so much. And again, then again, I'm such a fan of your podcast. Thank you so much for bringing this to us, and thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. We'll keep up with what you're doing.
Yep, definitely great talking to you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Technometria. For more of Technometria, please visit my weblog at www.windley.com.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was John Van Horn. Our website editor was Joel Cherney. The series producer is Joel Cherney.
My name is Phil Windley, and I hope you join me next time for another edition of Technometria on IT Conversations.